Our next case this morning is 5-25-0727, 111 Salvage LLC v. Metro East Sanitary District et al. Arguing for the appellant is Attorney Connor. Arguing for the appellee is Attorney Funk. Are you both ready to proceed?
We are, Your Honor.
Thank you. If you would, for the recording purposes, please state your name at the beginning of the case, and you may proceed when you're ready.
Good morning. My name is Timothy Ryan Connor, arguing on behalf of the appellant, 111 Salvage LLC. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Coming before you today is the appeal from Madison County Circuit Court of a Section 2-619 dismissal in full of a complaint in tort. That complaint alleged negligence on behalf of the Metro East Sanitary District. That negligence was the ignition of a fire that would have been on MESD's property immediately adjacent to 111 Salvage and the subsequent damage that occurred to 111. 111 brought suit within the Illinois Local Government Tort Immunity Act statute of limitations 1 year and sent notice to the board as prescribed by 70 ILCS 2905/1-5, but did not do so within 6 months of the date of the fire. This is the basis for Judge Smith's grant of a motion to dismiss filed by MESD in response to the complaint. MESD successfully argued below that the statute requires that the letter, the notice provision contemplated by Section 1-5 means 6 months from the date of the fire. We argued below for the application of the discovery rule to this specific set of circumstances, not to the Local Government Tort Immunity Act, because suit was filed within the 1 year, but application to Section 1-2905/1-5, which provides that that letter must be sent to the board within that 6 month period of time. The question before you is whether that is possible, because Judge Smith decided that as a matter of law, that is impossible, that 6 months means the date of occurrence only, and because it means the date of occurrence only, any complaint on its face must be dismissed if that letter was not sent within 6 months. We totally disagree, because for some policy reasons I'll get into later, what happened here is the creation now of a class of claims that are impossible to address. That, as argued below by my opponents, even if MESD knows of its conduct and the plaintiff doesn't know of the injury or the wrong, 6 months is 6 months. The mere passage of time has transformed a tort into something that is not a tort. It is now without redress. And 111 Salvage has no cause of action.
And the fire was on the adjacent property, correct?
On 111 Salvage's property, that's correct.
Right. But the fire originated on an adjacent property. That was the theory, correct?
That is the theory. That was the allegation that led to the 2619 filing, saying, as alleged, you allege the fire occurred over there, hopped the ditch, caught a big stack of cars on fire for 20 districts to respond to, and then as that investigation went on with no identified cause, at some point plaintiffs wake up and say,
well, my question is this. I think it's also alleged that there was a history of burning.
That's correct.
On that property, correct?
A history of burning and then a history of concealment of that burning, all alleged.
So my point is this. If, in fact, this has occurred, then why not just send a notice to be on the safe side? You know there's a history of this happening. It's the adjacent property. Why not just send a letter notifying them of the potential to bring action within 6 months? Why is that impossible?
That's the factual question we wanted to get to in the trial court. and we never got the chance because it was 2-6-19, either the letter was sent within 6 months or it wasn't. And the history of parting is not known to, was not alleged to have been known to plaintiff at the time of the filing of the action. Our point is that at least with regards to that six-month notice provision, because we're not trying to light a fire, pun intended, with regards to the Local Government Tort Immunity Act, we're trying to address this idea that for some reason there is a universal application of this six-month notice provision to any class of claims brought against this district. That this district enjoys one of the shortest statutes of limitation imaginable merely by virtue of its existence for all purposes, not just levy purposes.
It's not a statute of limitations. It's a statutory notice requirement, correct?
That's correct, but it functions here as the equivalent because the claim, as Judge Smith found, claim cannot proceed because letter not received within 6 months.
But that distinction is significant under the law, is it not? Because the discovery rule has applied to the statute of limitations, it has applied to the statute of repose in certain circumstances, but I'm not aware of any case authority that would apply it to a statutory notice provision in this context, or this, at least this specific one. Is there any such authority that supports that argument?
There appears to be no authority in either direction, Your Honor. That's really our problem, because as we argued below, either of us would be slapping the other in the face with authority that it applies or it does not apply. And perhaps to everyone's benefit, it looks like this doesn't come up very much. Either the Metro East Sanitation District doesn't commit very many torts, or they are not of the type that land in this basket. This appears to us to be a unique situation in which something that we believe the language of the statute did not contemplate, a totally separate and independent tort from the carrying on of the activity of the district, running a sanitation district. In this instance, they're doing something different. They're lighting a fire. I argued below and I argued today, it's the equivalent of one of their trucks driving down the road. Statute, especially at the time that it was written, didn't contemplate trucks driving down the road, concealed fires, and I want to, before I leave the point entirely, that idea that why didn't they simply send the letter because there was this history of parting, only thing new. And that was our point below, is we think that there has to be a factual determination that there's some knowledge that the tortfeasor as alleged is the tortfeasor as alleged. If you can't know who caused your injury, and you don't know that your injury was caused by an external force, your cause of action, by its nature, cannot have accrued. You have not identified your injury. The cases say that would be absurd. Rio says that would be absurd. And it would, because there is no governmental unit so special as to enjoy limitless liability, limitless immunity from liability, which is what they're asking for here, that it wouldn't have mattered, according to my opponent's argument, if they would have brought in a backhoe and covered the whole thing up, and whatever actions they took to conceal for 6 months, once that time passed, they're off the hook. That can't be what the statute contemplates. That can't be. The legislature could not, and there's some other cases that say this, the legislature could not have intended to create a class of wrongs incapable of redress. That's not what 1-5 does. But again, is there authority on any side? No. The only one we could find was the gas case that specifically addressed this statute and this provision of this statute and said, well, if 6 months pass from the date of the injury, and in that case it was a flood, MESD opens a floodgate, water comes out, all of the adjacent landowners know that their land has been flooded. There's a common source of the flood. It is MESD that is, in their operative language, operating a system of levees and ditches. That's exactly what they do. Those folks had every reason to know that the cause of their injury was their upstream neighbor causing their flooding problem. In this instance, there was no indication that it would have been the lighting of a fire that shouldn't have been there in the first place, then negligently maintained, left to fester, and then the ignition of a fire on NESD's property, or on 111's property.
I'm struggling to understand why that wouldn't trigger a belief in your client that this fire may have originated on the neighboring property that has a history of burning over the years. When they know themselves that it didn't happen on their property, they would have known if they had started a fire on their own property. Why would that not be sufficient to trigger notice?
Important fact questions. We want answers to those questions as well, and we would like to do that in the trial court. Trial court didn't want to hear that. Trial court said either you sent the letter within 6 months or you didn't. And so if 111 Salvage and its agents, because interestingly, we're not dealing with someone's house, we're dealing with a metal scrapyard, and the ignition of the fire, incidentally, and this was pled, there is no identified cause of the fire. It's not as if the fire marshal came out and said, it was those guys, and then we sat on it for 6 months. There was no identified cause of that fire. It wasn't until plaintiff was able to piece together pieces of information that they did know and were able to come up with that they said, it is possible that they are my tortfeasor. It is possible that they caused this fire. That happens, as alleged, in, I believe, February 16th. That 6 month would have run within days of that. They didn't know at the time. They put it together. They're able to file their lawsuit timely, but they're not able to send that letter timely. And so our point is the statute doesn't mean 6 months from the date of the occurrence, full stop. Because if it means that, then all of these horrible consequences accrue as a result of the application of that statute. There will be unredressed wrongs within that 6 months if there is no factual inquiry. The court inquired, and we alleged, an entire part of our argument in the motion to dismiss had to do with equitable tolling and the specific facts that would have created a very narrow window during which that period of time may have been told. The court actually reached that issue on the 2619 motion as well. We're not quite sure how that gets done without finding any facts or without basically saying you've not even alleged the elements of equitable tolling. We don't think that's the case here. So I don't want to bail out of our primary argument, but our secondary argument is we at least have to go back to Madison County for an analysis of that equitable tolling ruling on a 2619 basis because we clearly alleged the elements of equitable tolling. Whether the court wanted to apply it or not is a different issue.
You believe a fire is a sudden traumatic event?
Yes. It certainly wasn't a continuing series of events like was present in Gass. And I know my opponent's going to say, that sudden traumatic event should have known right then. That's what the cases say. You are on notice that a sudden traumatic event occurred, but that didn't translate to knowing that someone else caused that sudden traumatic event. Certainly not their next door neighbor.
Is that an element? Because cases, Berry versus G.D. Searle, plaintiff was taking birth control medicine. She had a stroke. 2 years passed and she filed suit, and the Supreme Court said the time for starting is when the stroke occurred, not when you discover who caused the stroke. So the time starts there. There's another case, LaPetre versus Petrie Brothers, where there was an explosion, and they said that explosion's a sudden traumatic event. That's when your time starts running, when you know, you don't necessarily know who's responsible, but you know you had something happen. Here you've got a fire that you say is a sudden traumatic event. Why does that not start the time running?
Because I believe everybody on the ground, and again, a fact inquiry that we'd love to have happen at the trial court level to make that determination. What we just don't want is a bright line rule that if that letter doesn't hit the door within 6 months, you're out of luck. We don't believe that's the case. We believe exactly that type of factual inquiry is required in order to reach the result. Are we barred as a matter of law? Those sudden traumatic events, at least in those instances, people had reason to know in the explosion that was an employee. He was at work. He had reason to know why he got blown sky high. There was clearly going to be somebody else responsible. With regards to the birth control, at least she was taking birth control pills. She was under medical care. Some external force was acting. In this instance, a big pile of cars caught on fire for no reason. They had no reason to know that it was their next-door neighbor under those conditions that could have occurred. That took expert testimony to develop. That took expert analysis. That took more work than simply knowing my car's caught fire because of a concealed fire started by my neighbor. I don't know if I'm out of time or not.
When this flashes solid yellow, you have 1 minute, so you're under 2 minutes now.
Great. RICO stands for the proposition that the Local Government Tort Immunity Act, at least, was not intended to bar meritorious claims prior to their discovery. And my opponent's going to say, it's a harsh result. Sure, it's a harsh result, but statutes can be harsh. And that's the way statutes work. If you don't like it, take it up in Springfield. But there's a constitutional component to that argument that says, sorry, we've inadvertently created a class of claims that are, that now have no redress. There is a balance there that exists between that constitutional policy of redressable claims and the laudable statutory goal of eventually putting a limitation on when those claims can be asserted. The balance can't be, hey, we made it past the six-month finish line, we're good. That can't be the end result of a statute that in no way mentions that. I'll address it in reply.
Thank you. Counsel Frappoli, Attorney Funk.
Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Brian Funk. I represent the defendants, including Metro East Sanitary District, in this appeal. I want to address an issue raised by Your Honor, why not send notice? And this is not like filing a lawsuit or complying with a statute of limitations. All you have to do is serve MESD, Metro East Sanitary District, with notice of a potential claim. You never have to act on it. It only takes a few minutes. You don't need legal counsel to do it. You don't need to pay a filing fee. You don't need to come up with your claims. It's a very simple thing to do. And I can tell you from experience that happens all the time. Right now we're litigating a lawsuit from 2019. It was a flooding lawsuit, 200 plaintiffs. Not all these plaintiffs are even serviced by the Metro East Sanitary District. But when the flooding occurred, they all served Metro East Sanitary District with a notice under Section 1-5. And they did that to protect potential claims that they may have. And there are, you know, indicators pled in the complaint that demonstrate that the plaintiff should have done that. As you pointed out, Your Honor, you had no history, they knew of a history of burning, allegedly. The burning occurred adjacent to their property. There was a no burn notice. They plead that in their complaint. So all these things indicate to you that possibly MESD is responsible. Now, of course, we deny that we did that, but that's alleged in the complaint. And for purposes of the complaint, it's accepted as true. But what's worse than that, they also plead in their complaint that they knew that MESD, or that they had suspicions about MESD prior to the six-month period expiring. So 6 days, I believe, prior to the expiration of the notice period, six-month notice period, they plead, we knew it was MESD. Well, you're not prejudiced when you know before the time period expires that MESD, or you believe MESD, was responsible.
So, counsel, to file a complaint, it has to be well-grounded in fact and law. With respect to a notice letter such as this, is there any type of legal standard that would require that the party sending notice have done any type of investigation or any type of similar standard as would apply to a pleading?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor. In fact, referring back to that case, that the flooding case, some of these plaintiffs are not even serviced by MESD. They're so far away from MESD infrastructure that you couldn't imagine or couldn't believe that MESD was involved. But they still filed notice. And really, there's no prejudice to MESD by filing that notice because they still have to investigate. They still have to determine whether they're going to bring a lawsuit against MESD, whether they have a viable and meritorious claim. So as long as they file that notice and notify MESD, their claim is preserved, whether or not they act on it. And the requirements in the statute are
not significant. You just have to provide an address and the probable extent of damages, and that's all you need to do. So here, plaintiff, you know, it's worse than just you should have known, you know, based on what they put in their complaint. They plead they did know.
Is there anything to be made of the fact that the statute uses the word occurrence rather than accrual?
Yes, I think what the statute says, the plain language of the statute says, is your time period for the notice provision starts on the at the time your damages occur. It's within 6 months after the occurrence of the damage or injury. Typically, in statutes of limitation, then they add the language that within such a period of time from the date your damages occur or at the time your cause of action accrues. And that language is contained in other notice provisions that have been repealed by the legislature. For example, 8-102 was in the Tort Immunity Act, and it included language about the accrual. So it had the same language here, but it also had the language that you see in statutes of limitations, which is how the discovery rule is able to be applied to statutes of limitations. And Section 1-5 does not have that language. And rules of statutory construction, we have to assume that the legislature knew what they were doing when they used that language in Section 1-5, but used different language in 8-102 or Transit Act or other similar statutes of limitations. And, you know, this case really begins and ends with the language of Section 1-5. It's clear and plain and unambiguous. There's nothing ambiguous about it whatsoever. It says no claim. Doesn't matter whether it's a fire, a flood, whatever. No claim shall be made for any damage to property. Once again, it doesn't say just floods or, you know, some other specific type of damage. Any damage to property unless notice in writing is filed within 6 months after the occurrence of the damage. That's it. That's where the case begins and ends. And the circuit court and Judge Smith correctly held that this claim is barred. Plaintiff is arguing that the discovery rule applies here. And the first thing we need to do to determine whether the discovery rule applies is look at the language of the statute. The Supreme Court has held, and this court has held in Hawkins, that you look at the language of the statute to determine whether it's compatible with the discovery rule. And as I just mentioned, it's not compatible with the discovery rule. The discovery rule states that their discovery rule tolls the date in which a cause of action accrues. Well, this statute has nothing to do with when a cause of action accrues, unlike, for example, the statute of limitations in this case, the applicable statute of limitations, 8-101 of the Tort Immunity Act, does talk about accruals of cause of when the cause of action accrues. So
you think Hawkins is controlling here?
I think Hawkins, this court went a step further than where I'm even going. In that case, you had a situation where this court was trying to determine whether discovery rule applied to a provision of the UCC. And the court noted that
the UCC, though, has a whole lot of very meticulous rules and guidelines and much more specific than what we have here, isn't it?
Well, I'm sure it does, but the focal point of that case was just whether the discovery rule language is in that statute, of that particular provision of the UCC. And this court said that there was no discovery rule language in that provision. That provision had accrual language. This court went further and said it's got to have that language, discovery rule language, knew or should have known. The language that the legislature has put in specific statutes of limitations, such as the hospital and physician malpractice statute of limitations where it's got additional language. And so this court said, first, you look at the language of the statute to see if it's applicable or see if it's compatible with the discovery rule. And this court said that accrual language is not compatible. Not even that's compatible. I would say that you can make an argument that if the statute says that your time starts ticking at when your cause of action accrues, then you may be able to apply the discovery rule. But it doesn't matter because this statute, 1-5 of the MESD Act, does not include that language. So the first problem for plaintiff's argument with the discovery rule is that the language is not compatible with the discovery rule. The fundamental thing that the discovery rule does, that language is not contained in Section 1-5. You also look at the context here. The plaintiff, you know, in the circuit court and here has argued that, well, we didn't know that MESD was responsible. We didn't know that MESD was negligent, which, as I mentioned earlier, that's incorrect. They pled that they did know. But that's not the standard, and, Your Honor, I believe you referenced that earlier. In Nolan, the Supreme Court said, we wish to emphasize that the rule we announce, speaking of the discovery rule, is not the same as a rule which states that a cause of action accrues when a person knows or should know of both the injury and the defendant's negligent conduct. That's not the standard for the discovery rule. That's the standard the plaintiff is asking you to apply, saying, well, we didn't know that MESD was negligent, so our clock should continue. And in Nolan, the Supreme Court said, you know, there would be no cap on in time. You basically, if the statute of limitations or notice of provision would be extended until you found out that a certain party was negligent. So the interpretation of the discovery rule that a plaintiff is asking this court to apply is incorrect. Then you have this specific situation. As you mentioned, Your Honor, this is a sudden and traumatic event. Just like LaPrietri, this is a fire, an explosion. You know that when a fire lights up on a stack of junk cars, that something happened and it was wrongfully caused. It's not supposed to spontaneously combust. At that point in time, you know, for purposes of the discovery rule, that it's wrongfully caused. And it's your duty then to go and investigate and determine what happened. And here, this is a sudden and traumatic event, and as a sudden traumatic event, the time starts ticking on the date of the event, which would have been August 22nd, 2023. And plaintiff did not serve their notice on Metro East Sanitary District until a year later. And once again, you know, looking at the specific facts of this case, this is not something that the discovery rule could apply to because the plaintiff knew before the time expired that they suspected MESD of setting fire, which once
again. From your perspective, do you believe we should rule in your favor because the discovery rule doesn't apply to the language that's used in the statute, or do you believe we should find that the discovery rule doesn't apply because it was a sudden traumatic event?
Both. First and foremost, I would say the statutory language, and that's what Judge Smith ruled in her order. The statutory language cannot be, as the Supreme Court has said, cannot be incompatible with the discovery rule. And another way to look at it is this, that every time the discovery rule has been applied, it's had some kind of language in that statute that allows it to apply, specifically when the cause of action accrues. Put it more simply, if the discovery rule tolls the time a cause of action, when the cause of action accrues, then the statute that you're referring to has to involve when a cause of action accrues. And that language is missing from the statute, Section 1-5. So you can't toll something that doesn't exist, I guess, would be my argument. So my first and foremost would be, yes, the language. But even if you got past that and said, well, somehow we can apply it to this language, then it's the arguments I referenced, including the sudden and traumatic nature of this event. And for those reasons, unless the court has any additional questions, we ask that the cert court's ruling be affirmed.
Justice Hackett?
Maybe just a moment on a slightly different perspective. It's raised in the briefs tangentially, but there's an argument suggested that this particular notice rule is within the scope of the anticipated actions of MESD, meaning that the Goss case you cited and some other ones are based upon damages anticipated in the functioning of the MESD, flooding, property damage, improper levee system, et cetera. Is there any force to the argument or any merit to the argument that the rule is anticipating those types of situations requiring notice and may not be applicable to these extraordinary circumstances, such as a fire or ground pollution or whatever? Any merit to that? It's brought up in one of the briefs, and it's, as we talked about earlier, as you talked about, sorry, the appellant's attorney talked about earlier, there is no strong case citations either way on this issue. And I didn't see any cases that would interpret that language any different way, but it is brought up in the appellant's brief referentially. Any thoughts on that?
Yes, thank you for the question. I think we're once again bound by the language of the of Section 1-5, and it specifically says any damaged property. It says no claim. So the language doesn't parse out specific claims, and the legislature could have done that if this was related to specific types of claims, including flooding. Plaintiff naturally went to flooding because MESD does a lot of flooding, flood control with the levees and other items, but that's not the only things they do. They would do waste management, other stuff like that. The legislature chose to make it as broad as possible. It said no claim for any damage, any property damage, and so that would include, in my opinion, plaintiff's claims here. They would fall within the statute, and they would be barred.
Thank you.
Questions?
No, thank you.
Justice
Long?
Thank you. Connor Rebell.
Thank you. So there doesn't seem to be much in the way of an ability to explain away this idea that if a sudden and traumatic event occurs, that with regards to the external force that causes that sudden and traumatic event, whether that's the shutdown of a bodily function from a birth control pill or an explosion while you're at work, each of those people has a path to track back to the cause of their harm the day it happens. I believe the explosion guy was in a coma for a period of time after that, and he still went back to the site of the explosion to learn that there was a gas line. And so the fact that it's a sudden and traumatic event, it was a big fire, it was on the news, there was helicopters. It wasn't as if they didn't know their stack of cars caught on fire, but to this day, EPA still thinks it was our fault. So the fact that we're here at all, being told that we should have known the cause of a fire that no one else seems to know, that we've developed a theory on our own and created an interesting donut hole that is 6 days wide in two statutes that I think we now all concede. One contains accrual language, the other does not. If the Tort Immunity Act contains accrual language and would have accommodated our 6 days on the other side of our statute of limitations, but we're now constrained by a notice provision that doesn't, we have an even more limited class of claims that is now capable of occurring but having no redress. Again, that can't have been the legislature's, there's no way to read those two things in harmony, saying the accrual language exists over there. See, that's what it would look like if it was intended to accommodate you. And it does, in fact, accommodate our cause of action, but it doesn't accommodate the letter. By my opponent's reading, we should just send letters to every unit of local government anytime anyone gets hurt. That way, we're covered. It doesn't take any time. We just send them all, and they can be inundated by these notice letters that now function as a statute of limitations with no accrual language. We can see that, and I think in our reply brief is where we talk about some of these changes that came out in the 1930s, where it stops being a single run-on sentence. We get a period, we lose some italics, and the Sanitary District Act is, you no longer have to recognize all sanitary districts, but it's talking in that section about the name of the district, and it's talking about what they do. And that's where that notice provision comes from. And as Council just mentioned, there may be people far-flung. The district should have that knowledge of who is hurt and to what extent they are hurt. If the person who was hurt knows that they were, in fact, hurt, that's why that accrual language exists somehow in the statute of limitations that applies to this case, but not in the notice provision that functions as a smaller and more punitive statute of limitations within that 6 months. Should they have known? That's the fact question that Judge Smith didn't let us get to.
Counsel, your argument that you'd have to pepper all of these local governmental entities with notice letters to be on the safe side, would there be any other conceivable local governmental entity that could have had a role in this fire beyond this particular defendant?
Well, none that we were aware of at the time and none that we're aware of now, but that would require that particular litigant to look to all of its neighbors, to anyone within a certain distance, any responding district. All of those, factually, would have had redress that the latent fire that occurred the weekend before this fire occurred didn't have. And so, factually, that's the argument we want to get to, because it will very narrowly, if there is a fact argument, if this is not a bright line, anytime 6 months passes, you can't bring this claim if you haven't given notice, because it will very quickly ferret out who should have done what. There would be someone to blame, the employer. Someone should have known becomes a very important part of that standard. Factually, if we should have known within that 6 day period of time that MESD was the cause of the injury, the notice provision is going to apply anyway. The discovery rule is not going to hurt anything. Wouldn't have changed a thing. They're arguing for a bright line rule because ordinarily I'm a municipal lawyer too. I want that bright line rule. I want to be able to say my liability is capped at 6 months. I don't even have to look at the facts beyond that 6 months. It wasn't intended in the statute of limitations. It's not intended in the notice provision. It's a convenient read that produces the right result for the defendants in this case, and that's why they did it at the time, and that's why they're relying on it now. We believe it's a fact inquiry.
Any questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you all.
We appreciate your arguments. We appreciate the briefs you filed. We will take the matter under advisement and issue a decision in due course. Thank you.